everybody. Welcome to episode 66 of the Alexis Sale Now Weekly podcast. And our last podcast was with Andrew Feinstein. Andrew Feinstein is how he pronounced it.
Someone in the bloody YouTube comments was like, actually, the German, the Feinstein is a German name and the pronunciation should actually be Feinstein, as in Einstein. I'm like, don't tell a guy how to pronounce his own name, for fuck's sake. He can call himself what he wants.
Indeed.
Did you see that comment?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
That was funny. Lovely chat. Lovely man. He's just a really warm person. I wasn't expecting, that might sound bad, but I wasn't expecting him to be so like kind and huggable and lovely, because he's always so serious. When you see him on Double Down News and all that, I've never actually heard him just talk about himself.
Yeah, he's funny, I think.
He is, yeah.
And very inspirational. I do feel, you know, in this hellscape that we are traveling through at the moment, I think that his, as I understand his ideas, that you know, every, I mean, that the way that you get around, you know, having these top-down socialist parties that never really work is that you build, it has to be built on a geographical location, really, that, you know, each group, you know, campaigns locally and then works through to maybe getting councillors elected and then eventually an MP. And I mean, it does seem like a sort of viable strategy, really. I mean,
well, we don't have the same access to like global networks of billionaires that these elites have. So we have to work with what we've got.
Yes.
And they try to make us feel like we're so connected with everyone around the world. But you can only do so much with that. And we have to realize that our neighbors and our community, we're all on the same side, no matter what disagreements we have.
Exactly.
We realize we're on the same team.
I think that that's our only real advantage that we have over them with their money and their weapons and their control of the media, is that we're everybody, you know. We are theoretically more or less everybody, you know. And if you can't do that on a national level, but you can connect. That's how Jeremy's made it work in North Islington. People voted for him because he knows them all. And when the media tells lies about him, they know that they're not true because they've got personal experience of what a wonderful man he is. And so it seems to me that that is the only way that a left party can really, that we can advance, really, is by building locally, by you literally, and it's not for me to do, but he was always going to be a much better candidate in Holborn and St Pancras than me.
Feinstein,
I can't, you know, I don't
like
want
people
to meet everybody. No, I like people when they're, you know, when they're in a room and I'm up on a stage with lights and the sound system and they're sitting down and they've paid to see me. I love them then.
No, you do like people. Let's not give that. I've seen you talk to strangers and you're very warm and open, but I think you need to be a different animal, really, because I think your life experience hasn't led you to be the guy knocking on fucking doors and stuff.
Yeah, and sitting in people's assemblies and listening.
But I did want to say it's not just a politician's job to get to know their community. I think that should be, we need to instill that responsibility in us personally as well.
What do you mean, the activists?
No. The everyman, you know, just if you see your neighbor, talk to them every now and then, you know, talk to the shopkeeper and ask them how they are. Little things like that is what it takes to build a community. You know, you look at these tower blocks and, you know, my friend lives in a big block of flats and hasn't ever spoken a word to anyone in the same building he lives in, you know, you all live in such tight, confined spaces, and yet there's no community there. And that's what's happening. We're being separated.
Yeah, I understand that, comrade. But I think that it's not just, that's one of the things also I think that this form of socialism offers is that you will get to meet your neighbours and work with your neighbours through campaigning with them. You know, just saying a cheery hello is not really.
No, but hello leads to, like Yoda said, hello leads to how are you, leads to how are your kids, leads to you actually caring about them once you know someone's story.
I still think it's better if you're doing that and pushing a message of anti-capitalism as well.
Fuck yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Comrade, yeah, that goes without saying, but I'm not everyone can be a full-on activist. Not everyone has that in them, but that is the ultimate goal, is fighting that message that, you know, this system needs to change. But we also have to fucking care about each other. Otherwise, there's no motivation and there's no strength. Like you said, the advantage we have is that we're everyone, but if we're all separate, living in our own little...
Comrade. I think if it's kind of connected to a kind of ideological struggle, it has more meaning. Just saying a cheery hello to the postman is not, you know, it's all very nice, but I don't think I want to spread a more... My message is more focused than that.
Well, don't think I'm... I agree. I'm not just saying, that's not going to save the world, saying hello to your neighbour, but that's the start.
I'm saying
if we expect our politicians to be building these communities, it's good if we help them. And that's how the message spreads better. Like, if I've been affected by a movement, I'm more likely to share that if I know the people I'm around me, you know, I'm more likely to bring it up in conversation. I'm getting lost in my thoughts now. Let me reflect on this, comrade, and then maybe we'll widen the discussion.
I think you're indulging in cheery helloism. I think you may have to be up. I think you may have to be subjected to an intense critical self-criticism, comrade, and then the session, and then maybe have to go to a camp for re-education for a little while.
Fine. But I think it's better than a keyboard warrior who wants to fight capitalism but doesn't know anyone, doesn't have anyone to talk to about it.
That's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm sorry, you've lost me now.
It's better to have someone to talk to about your passion and your activism rather than just being stuck on your phone and doing it on Instagram. Talk to my shopkeeper and say, these prices are too high, we need to fucking destroy capitalism. And then
I think we've got off to a very bad start here.
I blame Feinstein. Lovely bloke. What did you think of the video?
It's fine. It's one that I noticed another person on YouTube was worried by that cup balanced on the poof. Really, yeah.
No, the cup was safe. I think the wide-angle lens added a curve to the image, which made it look
Interesting enough, it is a family trait that drives Linda mad, that we, the Sale family, were all terrible balancers of things on other things, that we would often put... it seemed to be genetic kind of inheritance that we would, put cups on sort of the arms, very narrow arms of things where they would, or plates. We were always... My mother used to, as well, she would, you know, just balance things badly on top of other things, really. Mm. And then those things would fall down sometimes.
Of course, everyone knows about the short-lived Sale family circus. Acrobatics Act. Very
Brian Sailovsky's, yeah.
I think they did one show.
Yeah. I think it was on the cup was resting on a coaster, wasn't it?
It was on a coaster on a very large poof. There was no chance of it. Yeah. And also, if there's anyone you can trust, it's Feinstein with a cup. I think he would.
It made my ass look nice, I thought.
It did, yeah. So one person was like, look at them sitting in his Spanish villa talking to Feinstein.
How would we have flown?
It's quite a modest little house in London, actually, that you were sitting in. We didn't fly Feinstein to Spain.
No.
Ridiculous. It's funny. I do enjoy it. I've started enjoying it, reading some of the comments. But a big love to everyone who puts comments down and gets raises the interaction levels.
Yeah.
comments in the Patreon community chat room popping off over the last month. I've been, as you know, a bit quite unwell over the last month, so I haven't really been as involved in corresponding with everyone. But I did see all your well wishes and stuff, and I'm much better now.
Yeah.
It was like the 2nd or 3rd of January. I woke up for the first time without any pain in my stomach, and I breathed a massive sigh of relief. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really makes you appreciate your health. And I've started doing more exercise straight away, like twice a week or something. Look after yourselves, people. We can't fight the capitalists if you're not fit.
You can't. No, it's true. No. I don't know whether I was... No, actually, I won't.
I've watched all of...
What else have we got to talk about?
We've got a film to talk about, yeah. But
that's what else we got to talk, because I think this could be our, after the highs of Andrew Feinstein last week, I think this could be our lowest ever listened to podcast, I think. I think I'd listen to this podcast.
Come on. Hey, can you tilt your screen down a little bit so that your face is a bit more central? Because, as promised, I'm going to put a video version of our podcast on the Patreon from now on, whenever possible. So if you want to watch our faces with big clunky headphones on talking at each other through screens, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast, and watch the video edition.
I need to get my head on, don't I? I need to come see you.
We need to start thinking. Yeah, look at me. I wore a shirt. I've got my chest hairs out. Got my Palestine flag behind me. I've thought about this stuff.
Yeah, maybe. You've given it more. And you're changing your look, aren't you? We might as well just completely, let's go for this. The most tedious podcast ever. You changed, let's lean into it, as they say.
Yeah.
You've changed your look as well, because you used to be shaving head. I thought you were bald, really, but you're
no
not.
No one cares what I look like. But yeah, I'm growing and my hair out a bit, and I've shaved my beard.
You used to do that bald with the big beard, and now you look much more normal, really.
I'm trying to slowly transform into my dad.
Because that's right. You're trying to get this part in the film, yeah.
I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast, but yeah, I want to play him in the upcoming drama about the Iranian embassy siege.
He had florid mustachios, your father.
Yeah, so on top of this beard, there is...
Oh, he did look like him then. Yeah, suddenly I saw him.
He had long hair with a bald spot and a moustache. And that's... I'm slowly crawling towards that.
That's one of the things, again, we talk about my acting. It's one of the, with a lot of us, particularly when I was in Hollywood, you know, that a lot of actors, when they auditioned for a role, they would, they would dress as the character and spend days thinking, I never even learned the fucking lines. I really never put enough. And I remember auditioning for Gene Wilder once, some movie he was directing.
Wow.
And scaring the shit out of him. He was just so frightened of me.
Well, did you scream at him or something?
No. It was just, I don't know what it was. He's a very timid sort of man, really.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's an interesting thread. These terrible auditions I've had. I've talked to somebody about this. He's a forgotten figure now. There was a guy called Peter Greenaway who, had been in advertising and then made these really incoherent art films that were inexplicably popular for a while. The Draftsman's Contract is perhaps the most famous. And then there's one called The Thief, His Wife and His Lover.
Yeah.
Did I talk about that? You auditioned for that? Yeah, I
auditioned
to be the driver in that, and me and never of two people not got on, never of a director in it.
Yourself and Peter Greenaway?
Yeah.
I do like that film quite a lot.
Really?
Would you like to share any details about why you didn't get on?
Oh, I just thought he was a prick, and I thought his films were rubbish. Shouldn't have gone to the audition, really, should I?
Probably not.
Lindsay Anderson, we didn't get on. I had auditioned for Britannia Hospital. I think this was really before even I was well known. They gave the part to Richard Griffiths, I remember.
Man, the life, trying to make it in this acting gig for an unknown like me who does care and really yeah. tries is fucking tedious and like just it's tiresome, man. I just audition and audition and tape and tape and tape. And like every other day I rearrange my living room so I could stand in front of a blank wall and fucking tape a thing. I did an audition yesterday. I really hope I get it because it's such an easy gig and it pays a fuckload. It's one line in the commercial.
All right.
But they were like, I want to see a few takes of the line. Give us some variety. It's one line, very quick.
Yeah.
And I found myself recording like 7 minutes of me saying this line over and over and over again until it lost all meaning. And I just stood there and like, what am I doing? I just had a moment of existential crisis. Yeah. And then I'm watching the tape, trying to edit it and select 4 clips out of possibly 50 times I said this line. I was losing my fucking mind. And I just know you're not going to get, you know, any audition you do, there's a 1 in 1,000 chance you'll get it, you know.
At least we never had the horror of self-taping. Although, I mean, it was pretty bad going into a room and seeing a room full of, you know, a room full of versions of you in it.
That's so true.
Every Now I think about it, I have a stream of bad audition stories with often with directors who I actually like. But did I told you one where me and Paul Verhoeven?
No, please tell. It's Paul Verhoeven, director of RoboCop, True Lies. No, not True Lies.
Starship Trooper, which is one of the greatest films ever made.
Fucking incredible film. And then the Arnie one where his face comes off. What's that?
Total Recall.
Total Recall. Oh my God, what a movie. Yeah, so you and Paul Verhoeven.
Paul Verhoeven was making a film with Arnold called Crusade, which really good idea, but it didn't get made in the end. But they'd already, I think they were in pre-production, they'd built, that was going to be filmed in Malta. Anyway, I'd got the, this doesn't make me, I don't know what it makes me seem like, but I got it into my head at this point that I didn't want to act. I was done with acting for some
reason. When are we talking?
I don't know, this must be in the 90s, I think, or maybe late 80s.
Was this pre-stuff, post-stuff?
Probably post, but I can't remember, to be honest. Cassie was my agent, so it was sort of roundabout stuff. It was late, early 90s.
Okay, and you're deciding
I said, I don't want to. They want you to play this part, and it was just, I want you to play this part in Paul Verhoeven's very keen to have you in this film.
Fuck.
And I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to do it. I mean, God, I get these ideas in my head, and then, you know, people annoys people around me so much. I said, no, I don't want to do it. And then so my agent, Cassie, came back and says, no, he really wants to meet you. And I think Paul Verhoeven he's made some bad choices, but he has directed several of, you know, the top 20 or 30 films of all time, like Starship Trooper and
Striptease.
And yes, Striptease is one of his bad choices. But Total Recall as well. It's the original. You know, it's a masterpiece,
right?
Yeah. So I went in to meet him, and he said, oh, we've got this part for you in this one. I said, no, I don't want to do it.
You said to
and
him?
He's like, yeah. I said to Paul Verhoeven, I don't know what I was thinking. I said, no, you know, thanks. And he said, well, will you do anything? And I said, well, have you got a part where I could just, like, come to Malta for a week and then, you know, maybe I was fed up of being on location or something. Maybe it was after I'd spent 9 months in Australia. So I said, oh, yeah, we got this part as like a monk, you know, and you can come out and do it. And I was like, oh, all right, yeah. I remember bumping into Chris Fulford, who's a very good actor, who was in a thing I wrote in the you know, the kind of the antechamber before going in. And he said, oh, what are you here for? And I said, oh, I'm not here for anything. I don't want to be in this film. She must have made him want to punch me in the fucking face. So I said to Paul Verhoeven, anyway, yeah, all right, well, yeah, I'll play this monk then If you really insist, I'll play this. And then the money fell through anyway, so it never got made.
So angry at you right now.
I know, it's annoying, right? I mean, it is. Yeah, I know. I mean, it's you're right to be angry. I mean, it's such a dick. It's such a dick
nah,
move.
Paul, you know? Nah, just can't be.
I know. I was like, no, mate, I can't be.
But I can't. You know,
I can't be in your film with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I can't even put myself in your shoes. You've done it all by that point. It's like, I get it. Like, anything becomes tiresome, doesn't it? You know.
No, it's just me being stupid. I mean, this is just an example of rank stupidity, really. Just
right.
I mean, no.
You said it.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And what did you spend 9 months in Australia for?
Oh, this is, another terrible film I was in.
Solar Babies.
Reckless Kelly.
Gosh,
and
yeah.
We talked about that.
Yeah. Who's the lead in that?
We did talk about it. Yahoo Serious.
Yes, we talked about that ages ago.
Yeah.
God, that doesn't look great.
Not great. No, it's me. Hugo Weaving, of course, is my fellow baddie, who is Agent Smith in The Matrix and many other fine movies.
I just pictured you as Agent Smith, and that
would have
been
amazing. Yeah, so I don't know if it was before, but the main film location was in this place where Yahoo used to go on his holidays. It was a place called Nelson's Bay in New South Wales, and we were filming in the sort of, I think the grounds of a mental hospital, which was also like more or less jungle and crawling with snakes. And anyway, I was there for so long.
Fucking
hell. The movie was also so bad that, but it's perfectly possible that I was rude to Paul Verhoeven before that. I mean, I'm making out like that would be a reason why I didn't want to go away, but it's perfectly possible that the two were unconnected, really.
Those wild parts of Australia are terrifying and uncomfortable. I had some time out there in my gap year when I was 18, 19. I landed in Sydney and went to the cash machine and my card got rejected. I'd spent all my money in a week in San Francisco on sushi, basically, and landed in Sydney with no money. So the next morning at 5 a.m., I was working on a building site with Tongans.
They're tough people as well, Aussies, and, you know, they're not, you know. I've never heard the word mate said with such...
Malice, yeah. After a month on this building site in Sydney, I had to get out of there and I found a job on an island.
You managed to work on a building site in Sydney because they're tough fucking people.
Yeah, I was working with Tongans.
Right.
There was like 8 Tongans who are Polynesian kind of natives and naturally built as fuck.
Yeah.
And there was like 8 really hench dudes and then one elder who was like skinny and always smoking cigarettes and was like everyone kind of respected him and all that. Yeah. And they were terrifying. At one point I spoke out a line, I made the wrong joke.
Right.
And they all surrounded me and were like, have you ever been knocked out, mate? You know, and then managed to just, I made a joke, made them laugh. And then next thing, you know, they had their arms around me and I'd won them over kind of thing. But after a month of that, I had to get out of there and I found a job on a website on an island called Great Keppel Island, which is off the coast of Rockhampton.
Right.
There's a bit of a yarn if you don't mind, or shall I cut it?
I think we're leaning into the team anyway.
Two blokes chatting, you know, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That's what most podcasts are.
I think people have moved on to Alistair Campbell and Stuart.
The rest is bullshit. So I found this job on a Great Keppel Island off the coast of Rockhampton, up in Queensland, I think. I spent 21 hours on a bus going there on a ferry to the island. And I arrived and it was working in this little hostel. And when I arrived, I said, hi, my name's Talal Karkuti and I'm here to work. The guy welcoming me, his eyes widened. He went, you're Talal? And I said, yeah. And he goes, I thought you would be a Korean girl. I was like, what? The website I'd found the job on was for Korean travelers to find temporary work, and they just assumed I was a Korean woman. So right. He had this maid's costume ready for me, like put the maid's costume away and pulled out a cook's outfit and gave me some cook whites, chef whites. And I was like scrubbing dishes, and the chef there was a fucking nutter, and he threatened to kill me, you know, probably 50 times and like chop my head off. And he'd get so angry. Yeah. He'd ended up dying of a heart attack while I was there.
Blimey.
He was so wound up, like just one of those guys. I was living in a shed in the middle of a jungle. Temporary, this structure was like just wooden boards put
together.
Especially
Queensland, presumably full of wildlife.
Full. Possums in my walls, spiders, lizards all over the walls. Catch lizards and made a little lizard farm in the corner of my room. And there was but at night we'd sit on the beach and smoke fucking bushweed and stare at the phosphorus glistening in the water. Fucking unbelievable sights. And I heard this noise like coming out of a bush. And I was like, what the fuck was that? And this guy was like, don't worry, mate. It's just a bird spider or a huntsman. And I said, aren't they like the deadliest spiders on earth? And he's like, yeah, but just don't mess with them and you'll be fine. I was shaken up. But then later on that night when I was in bed, lying in bed, about to fall asleep, I heard from the corner of my room, I heard the same fucking noise. And it was, so like these...
They're not. I don't think they are deadly. The readers can... I think, I mean, they're huge. They're the size of a Volkswagen, but they're not deadly, I think.
They eat birds. Spiders.
Yeah, but they don't attack people, I don't think.
Well, let us know, listeners.
Yeah. All right, my story is, while I was stuck on Nelson's Bay I decided to rent a ute. You know, the ute, the kind of iconic...
Yeah, like
Aussie
a pickup truck.
Pickup truck, basically. Yeah, but based on a car chassis, sort of indigenous. They didn't really rent them. The only place I could find was a video shop for some reason in when you used to rent video cassettes in the town of Newcastle. So
rented a ute from a video shop?
Yeah, okay. Any place. I know.
Just wanted to make sure I heard that right.
I gave them a deposit of $100, and they were like, they were very pretty unpleasant. And then don't damage it, mate. And the first thing I did, I was so wound up having this, I drove into the back of a bus with it, and then I drove around for a week in this fucking stupid ute. Anyway, took it back and tried to pretend that it didn't have a bus shaped dent in it. I'm like, I don't know how that happened. And then that's when they said, mate, you're not getting your deposit back. It's like,
did you have to deal with the bus driver as well? What happened there?
No, I don't think they did. It was not, the bus didn't notice that this ute had gone into the back of it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
At the tail end of my gap year, after Australia, I went to New York State to visit my friend who was, training to be a chef. There's a famous cookery school near Poughkeepsie.
All right.
In between Poughkeepsie and Hyde Park, upstate
famous
New York.
Famous line from the French Connection.
Picking your toes in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
Isn't that?
Yeah, picking your feet in Poughkeepsie. I think it's feet rather than toes. I don't know.
I would say that repeatedly when I was walking around.
There's literally nobody
there.
Listening to this now.
No, there is. And I didn't have a driving license, and my mate would lend me his pickup truck while he was at school. And he gave me a map, like an OS map, and circled like 3 points and said, I have a mate who lives here, a mate who lives here, and a mate who lives here. Random spots in rural areas. And I was driving his pickup truck. He just gave me like a crash course in how to drive it.
Yeah.
And I bumped into a lady in front of me in traffic.
Oh my God.
And I'm 19, terrified now.
Yeah.
And she like pulls into a car park and like gesturing to me to come so we can exchange information.
Yeah.
I don't feel proud of this. I fucking took a left and zinged off into the
woods. No. I didn't know how that story was going to go.
It was a very light hit, but maybe there was a small dent or a scratch or something. But I didn't know what to do. Like I would have. Going to American jail as an Arab, young Arab man after 9/11 with no driving license. Like I was I just had to, my instinct said fucking run, and I just went, well, am I a bad person?
Yeah.
Okay. Thought so. Terrifying.
Yeah.
One last thing. I've got a fun job tomorrow. It's technically an ADR job, but it's a voiceover job. Basically, they've taped a show. I can't tell you the name of the show or anything, but I'm revoicing a character in a show. He's meant to be a Syrian art dealer,
mm-hmm.
but they cast a Moroccan, so his accent is wrong.
Right,
but he's got a really good face, like for the role. Yeah. I understand why they cast him, I guess. But they needed someone with a Syrian accent to come
in. It's like a TV, you can say what it is. I mean, TV show.
No, I can't say anything else about it.
Well, I've done that as well. It's interestingly, because there's a film called Meeting Venus, which is directed by a guy called István Szabó. And to enjoy this film, you really need an intimate and wide-ranging knowledge of the Wagner opera Tannhäuser. So it wasn't really a huge success, but they had a Czech guy in who'd learned English phonetically. And
wow, yeah.
Was, you know, so, and I revoiced him. So if you ever see the film,
Meeting Venus.
The other interesting thing about this was that everybody on the film, a lot of people on the film, was called Stephen Taylor, but in different languages. Because I think, I might have made this up, I think István Szabó means Stephen Taylor in Hungarian, in Magyar. And there was a guy on it called Stefan Schneider, I think, which is Stephen Taylor in German. And then there was a guy called Stephen Taylor on the crew.
From Aerosmith?
No, not him, but the same. So everybody on the film, more or less,
was called wild.
Stephen Taylor, yeah. Meeting Venus. It's actually quite an interesting film, but and Tannhäuser is, you know, despite it being Wagner, is there are bits of it
a lot of amazing. Actors who get revoiced don't know that's happened until they watch the thing.
Really?
How would you feel if you watched The Bride and suddenly Ian McKellen's voice comes out of your face?
Least of the problems in my performance on The Bride. I don't know, really. I also revoiced. There's a children's TV animation series that was on Nickelodeon thing called Olive the Ostrich, and I revoiced the whole of the second series of Olive the Ostrich because the original voice was Ulfaris.
Oh fuck! Oh, so and was that at the time when
yeah, it was right at the time and. Olive the Ostrich was a bit of a psychopath anyway, but
shame.
So again, I suppose being revoiced with Olive the Ostrich was the least of Rolf Harris's problems at that time.
We didn't bring up Rolf when we were talking about separating the art from the artist.
Oh, right. Well, at least not really.
No, but when I was a little kid, that I was his main audience for his songs and for Animal Hospital, you know, a big part of my childhood.
Right.
Big part of my childhood, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
What a shame.
I don't think this is really betraying any confidences, but when I was friendly with, you know, Billy Connolly and Pamela Stevenson, and I think at one point they lived on the Thames and he was next door, and they had to move because he kept coming round with his musical instruments.
Fuck off.
Like the doorbell would go and it's always Rolf Harris again. And in the end, I think they moved because this, again, before, you know, long before any bad, you know, bad shit had come out about him. So Billy and Pamela actually sold up because
that's so funny.
Their house, rather than infested with huntsman spiders and lizards, was actually infested with Rolf Harris.
Another dangerous, deadly Australian creature.
Yes. We made that link after 34 minutes. It's all come round. It all links up this show. It's like, it's connected under the surface. There are these links. Yes, another dangerous. Your story about living in that shack now has a point. reached a comedic climax because Billy and Pamela's house was infested with another dangerous Australian mammal. In this case,
that's funny.
Rolf Harris. So if you're listening, the one person who's still listening, you see it all links. Well,
I've got another story about Great Kepaline, but I'll save it for another
time
when it comes up organically.
You don't want to blow it all.
No. Fascinating place. maybe speaking of films as well, I don't think there's only one person listening. Come on, there's gonna be. Let us know if you've made it this far into the podcast.
This is for you, the one person. I think you're called Jackie, and you live in Hebden Bridge. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Jackie in Hebden Bridge. If you've made it this far into the show, please leave a comment saying hello. My name is Jackie. And I'm an Alexi Holic.
Oh, God.
No, we give them a heavy, substantial, wonderful conversation with a political guest such as Andrew Feinstein. And now we can just have an episode where we're talking bollocks. It's the Alexi Holic podcast,
easy.
Man.
Easy like Sunday morning.
But it is. We normally do this on the first podcast of the month.
Right.
But because of illness, it's been moved to the second podcast of the month. It's it's time for the Alexi Sale Film Club.
Dad, they've got a theme music. It's the Alexi Sale Film Club. Alexi Sale and Tello talking about films.
And Alexi has an existential crisis, wondering what's the point of it all.
Well, I'm a bit goofy because I was talking before coming doing the podcast. I was talking to Rich Morris, the producer of Sandwich Bar, which is listen to the edit is amazing, but it's a little bit short. I've got to find. We're doing some re-records on, I think, before the news quiz on the 6th of February. If people want to try and get tickets for that, but so I've got to find another. And also the world's changing so fast, you know, when we recorded Sandwich Bar in December. and now the sort of specter of Elon Musk is it's like you're in a ute that you've rented from an unfriendly video shop in Newcastle, New South Wales, and a bus is kind of, you go in the back of a bus, it's coming closer and closer towards you. I don't think this analogy is quite working, but you know, just
Elon bus.
I mean, I've got to think up some Elon Musk Trump material, but you can't really until.
Not just that, about him trying to influence British politics too.
I know. Well, it's one of the things that there's a lot of hatred for Starmer in this new series. Now you sort of think, well, I think people are starting to feel protective, but he's like, I'll leave him alone. It's this big bully Trump, Musk. So, you know, it's all right for us to say he's a little shit, but, you know. He's our little shit.
Yeah.
So the kind of anti-Starmer material feels a little.
Oh, no.
I don't know. So I'm going to have to, anyway, I'm going to have to do a bit of rewriting. But it is, most of it is magnificent. To be able to do comedy in this world that we are in at the moment, I think it is a comedy in which it's a radio comedy series in which the word genocide is repeated more often than any comedy series has ever you know been repeated before.
Tricky little. Oh, you want to brainstorm some ideas then? Do a little brainstorm session right now.
No, I'm tapped out.
Good luck with that.
But yeah,
so that's a good tip though. You'll be re-recording before. News quiz.
I think it's before the news quiz in the radio theatre on February the 6th.
So listeners, if you want to go to that, if you missed your chance to catch him in December.
Yeah, we'll be recording.
What's this, BBC tickets? 40 minutes.
Yeah, ticket unit,
There's if you Google BBC tickets, you'll find it.
February the 6th of February.
Okay. It's near my birthday.
Should we get on to Film Club now?
Okay, fine. I watched all of Day of the Jackal, and I agree with you that it's spectacular. It's quite classy. It's a classy show.
Apart from the ending.
The ending was shocking. What, you didn't like the ending?
I thought it was a cop out, really. I didn't. What you know? It's suddenly, you know, with a bound, he was. You know, he was. Suddenly,
spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert! Yes, he was just. You know, who was it? How did he get away from all the police and they were following him and that? It's never really explained. I mean, it was certainly interesting. I mean, it was certainly a bold choice for him to kill Lashana. You know, to.
Bianca, yeah.
Yeah, the protagonists that he...
But very moving to see that happen. Like, that is a bold choice, but it is effective.
I mean, Ronan Bennett, I think, is a very interesting character in himself, really. Writer-producer of that series.
I wonder where it'll go in the next season without one of the leads in it. Yeah, he did have a bit of a... He became quite smarmy and suave after all of, you know, in the final scene when he's like, got some business.
I think it's always with those things. They're always a letdown, ultimately, really. I mean,
down by it. Feel that way. But I'm very easy to influence. So now you're making me second guess myself. But I just want to say I understand why you liked that show, you little gun nut, you. It was very gun porny.
Yeah, it was very gunny, yeah.
And I think the word enhance has been replaced by enlarge. There was like episode one or two when the MI6, they're watching some footage and she's going, enlarge, enlarge, mm-hmm. enlarge. You know, that old trope, you know, when they zoom in on the footage. She goes, enhance, enlarge. I recommend it though. It's a good show. I did think it was.
Yes, I thought Radio Red Man, I mean, a posh.
And it was, I think it was entitled. A very pro-Palestine show.
Yes, well, because Ronan Bennett is, because he was in the IRA. I mean, portrays the, I think he was, I'm not traducing.
I didn't know that. It has Khalid Abdullah in it.
Yeah.
Who reveals at one point that his character is Palestinian and he is a very pro-Palestinian actor. And Charles Dance is an advocate for Palestine as well.
Is he?
Yeah. So that made me think it's quite a pro-Palestine show. But then they did play a Radiohead song. Zionists.
Swings and roundabouts. Yeah.
Swings and roundabouts. But anyway, okay. Film Club. Alexis Film Club.
Excellent. Talk about films.
So it's broadcast news from 1987. I'll introduce it and then you can talk. Yeah. I wrote a little intro again. I always get a little. I always have a couple of drinks when I watch these. So by the time I write the synopsis, I'm on one. James L. Brooks is the director and writer. He did As Good as It Gets, Terms of Endearment, and other films, starring Holly Hunter, William Hurt, Albert Brooks. In James L. Brooks's smash 1987 hit Broadcast News, national news producer and reporter duo Jane and Aaron's national news reporting relationship gets flipped turned upside down when local news anchor and straight up bimbo Tom gets promoted into their national news team. His charm, way with words, and good looks help elevate their team to the upper echelons of national news broadcasting. But his lack of knowledge and his preference for sensation over substance makes Jane wonder if this is the news she really wants to produce. Also, Jane loves Tom, but Aaron's loves Jane, and Jack Nicholson is also in the film. News! Broadcast news.
I thought that description really missed everything about the importance about the film. No, it was a fine description. Broadcast news is, James. What else has he done? He's a really interesting guy, I think. But it brought together interesting.
James L. Brooks, As Good as It Gets in Terms of Endearment are two of his biggest films.
Has he done anything sort of lately?
More recently, he's done a film called Spanglish. He worked on The Simpsons.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. He was one of the originators of The Simpsons.
And he wrote The Simpsons movie, which was surprisingly good considering how bad recent Simpsons
episodes are. Simpsons is terrible now, isn't it?
Yeah, but the movie, it does hold up.
I agree. Spider Pig. So he was an interesting guy. He'd done some interesting work. What's the other? Albert Brooks is not really that well known in this country, but he was... No. sort of partly Jewish kind of Hollywood aristocracy. His father had been a comic, I think. And he, Albert Brooks, used to appear on like the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and well, Late Show with Letterman and stuff like that, and do really interesting films. I'm slightly self-indulgent, I think, because he was so kind of plugged into Hollywood. Really, he was. I mean, it's interesting, and the sort of films that he did are often not as funny as he thinks he did. Mm. He also has made some. We wrote some movies, but this. And Bill Hirt, of course, who I think is in some ways an underrated. I mean, he's very well. I mean, when I worked with him, he was a very difficult person to be around. But a great actor. I particularly like him in A History of Violence.
Ah, with Viggo.
With Viggo Mortensen, which is really. I mean, which is the sort of. I mean, there's a bit in Sandwich Bar about the special forces, or hitman hiding out in the suburbs and being forced to be drawn back into their, you know, their killing ways by, you know, figures from their past. But this was one of the first films that used that trope, really. Mm. And I think it's, I mean, it's a, I think William Hurt is particularly fantastic. He's fantastic in this film. And Holly Hunter is
very
well
suited to the role.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a beautifully subtle performance, I think. Holly Hunter. It's also about kind of love triangles in a sense. It's about mm-hmm. the impossibility or the difficulty of love, the difficulty of love with somebody with whom you have profound ideological disagreements. But it's also about a crucial moment when the story, when journalists suddenly became the story. Like if you look at ITV News now and Tom Bradby will make a little, you know, will make a speech about how he feels about the news. And it's like, fuck you, you shouldn't be the story. We, you know, but this is when that, this is a kind of part of, I mean, before the internet, and but the start of the descent into, that's when everything started to get worse, I think, is chronicled in this point in broadcast news.
Yeah,
it's also got
sensationalism.
But also just the news has always been manipulated, but it's when news went from being a sort of sober kind of analysis to being just another branch of the entertainment industry, I think.
Well, and that's Jane's character does like a lecture early on about how they should. She's at like a local news conference, and she's doing a lecture about how there's this danger of news becoming all about puff pieces and not about actual news, and the audience are like, fuck off, and they all start leaving.
Walk out, yeah.
And then that's when Tom meets her. He walks up to her and goes, that was great. But he's probably lying because he becomes anchor and he gets caught out. He gets caught doing that.
Yeah, faking a thing. But I don't think, but that's the thing, that's the cleverness of the writing and the acting is that he's not, he's sincere. He's a sincere and honest person.
Yeah.
I think he's just dedicated to something wicked, really. And I think that that's just one of the fascinating things about this.
He's very open about being ignorant, and he's just, he feels like an imposter, but he keeps getting told, stop complaining, go along with it. And I guess that's what he ends up doing. So you're right. He's not lying.
He's just a really interesting character that you don't. I mean, again, you don't. You know, you just don't see subtle characterizations anymore, really. And this is just a marvelously complex. It's also got some great lines. I always like that line. I always use when I'm teaching screenwriting. I always, which I don't. It makes me sound like I'm
screenwriting lectures.
Given one of my famous McKee style lectures on screenwriting because of all the great films I've written. But I say that just one of the greatest lines in movie making is that where he wants to tell her about, and he says to her over the phone, let's meet at the place where we went that time. And I just think that is the greatest. I may have talked about that before, because it says so much in a simple line. It says so much. It says it gets over the information that he wants to meet her. But it also gets, it also tells you about the depth of their friendship that he doesn't have to say where the place is. It's just, it's where a line, you know, does two or three things at the same time, really. And it's a magnificent piece of writing. There.
I'll meet you at the place near the thing where we went that time.
Yeah.
And she instantly knows exactly the spot.
Yeah.
That says so much.
Absolutely. One of the greatest lines in movie writing, I think. It's brilliant.
Regarding the dialogue of the film, I did find that the dialogue was so clever and really, like, really funny, you know, comical language and dialogue. Like, you'd think it's unrealistic because no one actually is that smart and witty in the moment when they talk to each other. But yet, you really believe the conversations and they feel real and the relationships feel real. So... Those I think that lines. Is such a tight balance between writing and directing. You have to make it feel natural that they're so sharp and witty with each other.
There's that where the guy's just been fired and he's the boss says to him, if there's anything I can do. And he says, I certainly hope you'll die soon.
It's so good. And another one is like, I think I need to be alone for a while. And he goes, all right, I'll come with you. He goes, thank you.
It's as a movie, it's slightly dated, isn't it? It's, you know, there's just aspects of it there, but it's, I think it's a really,
dated in the sense of tone and pace is what I noticed. Because if you'd had given that dialogue to like Tarantino or Wes Anderson or something, because this is pre those directors kind of changing the language of cinema, if you'd have given those lines of dialogue to a director like that, they would have been like, jump cuts, zoom in, like really stylized, a punchy little zing on the bass line, give it some music punch, and these lines would have made you fucking think, oh, this is the coolest character in the world because he said this thing and the camera zoomed in and the music did that thing, so now I think this character's super cool, whereas these, they're all schlubs working in a messy office saying the same quality, like incredible dialogue at each other, but the editing and the pacing isn't trying to grab our TikTok brains and tell us this is cool. It really takes a lot of the trust that the audience are just going to sit and soak it in and take it and not be forced to pay attention like films make you do in the 90s started making you do in the early 2000s.
Yes, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
That I found, and I was struggling at first for that very reason. To kind of dive into the film and like be bought over by it, be won over by it, but it did. It took me like half an hour, and I was like, I understand the language.
Yeah,
now.
It's and very smart screenplay.
Really smart. Even background characters having conversations behind them. It's all relevant, and it's all telling you the story of the landscape of news.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, it's an underrated masterpiece, I think.
I thought it was a shame that Holly Hunter is third billed in the cast. She is the lead. She is the lead character.
Yes, it's true. Yeah.
And I found that a real shame, but she's got a great voice. Is she tiny or is Joan Cusack humongous? Because when they hugged,
I think Holly Hunter is tiny, I suspect. Yeah.
Joan Cusack's great. She has a great scene when she has to get the tape.
Yeah,
this is it. So this is analog. I've been in newsrooms like this, and it's all very realistically portrayed. But I've never been in a newsroom when things were analog like this. Like,
right? Yeah,
they're editing these broadcasts
on tape.
Yeah. On a tape, and she has to run it to the newsroom.
Yeah,
she's got like 10 seconds to get across the building and put it in the newsroom's tape deck in time for it to be shown on air.
Yeah,
and she does this like gauntlet through the office, and it was a great scene.
Yeah,
cool stunts as well.
Yeah.
Is there anything else to discuss? Any other points of business?
Well, we can. I suppose. When did we discuss what film we're gonna watch next?
Let's take a week to think about that. All right. Don't have to make a decision now. Or unless, do you have an idea?
No, not really. I just think we could do. We could do. Directors I've insulted at auditions. There's quite a choice there. Peter Greenaway, Paul Verhoeven, David Lean. I won't tell the David Lean story. Oh, I more or less killed David Lean.
Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder.
You didn't insult him, but did you?
I just remember him just being really frightened of me, and must have been in that, you know, in that period when I was, I had a frightening kind of stage presence. Also, I auditioned for Henry Winkler, I remember it, who makes an appearance in.
Something?
Yeah, I think so. He makes an appearance in. He's one of the. I'm giving it away now, but he's one of the customers in the Imaginary Sandwich Bar. or we could just do interesting films. I'm sure.
Do you remember what
more.
The Gene Wilder film was that you auditioned for?
Yes, it was. I think it was called Haunted Something or Other. He's making it over here, actually. I remember it was a. It didn't do very well. It was called Haunted. No, maybe it was called Haunted Honeymoon, or I think it ended up with people like Mel Smith in it and stuff. Sort of horror film.
What's your favourite Gene Wilder film?
I'm not a huge. I find his performances a bit over. I mean, it's interesting those. The other partnership that he had with Richard Pryor was very interesting. Well, I mean, there's the producers.
Oh, the producers is fantastic, yeah.
Mel Brooks is somebody who I have a problem with, really. So I told you, I went, for some reason, I was invited to the premiere of whatever, History, I think he did History of the World Part 2, or is it some movie anyway?
Yeah.
And I was at the premiere, and I was chatting to Alan Yentop. Alan Yentop, for those in the, was, I think he rose to, he started off in, I've known Alan a long time, he rose up Arena, and then I think was controller of BBC Two or something. I think it was the highest he rose. And anyway, somebody wow. famous to know that, knowing everybody. Anyway, so he said Mel Brooks was on the, had come for this audition, and Alan took me over to Mel Brooks and said, well, Mel, this is a young comedian called Alexi Sale. And Mel Brooks said, I haven't got time for that now, Alan. That's the time I met Mel Brooks.
Wasn't Solar Babies something to do with Mel Brooks?
Mel Brooks had a development deal for some reason. And that, yeah, Solar Babies was directed by his choreographer, who had choreographed the dance routines in Springtime for Hitler.
Right.
And so for some reason, Mel Brooks had chosen to give him his big chance as a director, a chance he never got again. But yeah, off the back of he had a string of hits. So they gave him a development deal, which is basically, you have funds to develop films and the studio will finance them. And I think his development deal probably stopped after Solar Babies.
Probably, yeah. No, you got producers, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, I think are the three good Mel Brooks films.
Yeah.
And I tried watching Spaceballs recently and I couldn't get through it. It was atrocious.
Yeah.
And the recent, he did the History of the World Part 2, I think was the recent thing. It was a 5-day television event, such arrogant fucking thing to do. And it was trashed. It was really bad. He's not done anything. Yeah, History of the World Part 1 might have been. But Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor did Speak No Evil, Hear No Evil, which I haven't seen in a long time, but I remember loving that film
as
a kid. Paul Verhoeven, maybe Starship Troopers could be an interesting one. Let's have a think about that.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I mean, it is, yeah. It certainly could be, yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm a much misunderstood film, I think. Neil Patrick Harris, of course, in it.
Yes. I forgot to mention Jack Nicholson in our... It was a very brief chat about broadcast news.
Yeah, was it? I'm sorry.
Jack Nicholson, you should be. No, that we should be, the listener deserves more. But no, we're running out of time.
Jack Nicholson
stole the show, I think, in one scene.
Yeah, it made me think... You think about those kind of those alpha news presenters, like epitomized by somebody like Hugh Edwards. I mean, he's a kind of Hugh. I mean, well, they were bigger in the States, weren't they? Those Ed Morrow. I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but they used to have these real alpha male news presenters there, who were titans in the field, really. And he plays one of those, really.
Wolf Blitzer. And what did you think of the framing device at the beginning where you see all the three lead characters as children? This is kind of like the cold openness of the film. You see what
like
the three leads.
I like a framing device, me. I like a framing device. I always like a framing device.
So you see them all as kids in three little scenes at the beginning, and you just the children, the child actors are incredible at portraying these personalities as what they would have been like as kids.
And then Albert Brooks' character says to this bullies who have beaten him up, "You're never going to earn more than $19,000 a year." And they said he goes, $19,000 a year? It doesn't sound that bad. Very clever, very clever. And, you know, again, it gives the film depth. I think a framing device is often a worthwhile thing. You sometimes forget that they have them. I mean, like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, of course, has a framing
device. That's the one you brought up before,
I wonder whether another thing I like is a time lock. A time lock is when characters have to complete a task in a certain time. There's a really good time lock film called Around Midnight. And there's another really good one I liked. See whether it stood up. I might suggest that. It's with Bill Murray and is it Gina Davis, where they've robbed the bank and they've got to get out of Manhattan in 10 hours or 12 hours or something. Whoa. But it's a really interesting film. Bill Murray robs a bank dressed as a clown. That might
never
be one.
Never heard of that one.
It's really interesting. Again, when I'm talking to my students in these mythical lectures that I don't give, it's a film I often say.
There's one with Bruce Willis and Mos Def.
Yes.
And Bruce Willis, Steph is like a witness to a crime, and Bruce Willis has to get him across town.
Yeah, is that 12 Bridges or something? Is that that one on 9th Street or something?
30 blocks or something.
30 blocks,
Something like that. And he has to get into the courthouse in time for the. Without him getting killed. And Time lock.
That's a time lock film. Yeah, maybe we'll do. So we'll have a think about which time lock.
Does Speed count as a time lock film? That's a speed
lock.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, I mean, it's not a conventional time lock in a sense, is it? But yeah, it does.
Time lock. I like that. Right. Speaking of time, we're out of time.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy this.
What was her name? Jane?
Jane, yes.
Was it Jane? I hope I've remembered the name correctly.
In Hebden Bridge.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah.
I think that was a corker, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I get too fixated, partly because I've been working on Sandwich Bowl, which is so tightly written, you know, that I get fixated on that there also is a role for the, you know, baggier kind of entertainment, really.
Yes. A podcast isn't traditionally a scripted type thing.
Yeah.
It's the feeling of camaraderie and sitting in a coffee shop with your friends, having a chat, and it can be aimless and wandering. I wonder if our listeners enjoy this aspect of the show. But they've enjoyed it ever since we've gone weekly. It has mostly been this.
Yeah.
No, we're talking in circles again. I don't think it's an issue. If it's ever too much, let us know. I know, actually, don't. There's already people in the comments.
Is it only Patreon members who get the footage?
They're going to see this footage, yeah. You were pulling quite a funny face.
I pull faces when you're talking, yeah. That's another reason to become a Patreon member, isn't it? I'm not listening to you.
You're not. You insulted my intro for broadcast news, and it did cover everything.
I felt guilty. Yeah,
in the film.
I'm sorry.
I know that was very funny. Don't feel guilty. But it did cover the fucking topics of the film. You just weren't fucking listening. Do you remember what happened to me in Australia? Name one thing that happened to me in Australia.
Oh, you were. Look, everything. The cook died of a heart attack. The Tongans looked askance at you. There's a lot more in the. I mean, it's quite. There's a lot more. I mean, I was sort of panicking because at the start I was thinking, is this too baggy? But there's a lot. You know, and it is like an entitled Londoner in a way and a gap year. But on the other hand,
I had no money and I was working the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the first we were before we went to Nelson's Bay. We shot a bit of Reckless Kelly in Sydney in the tower block, and I remember the crew just having a huge punch up with each other. And I thought, I don't know whether to think, you know, I mean, this is like 90s. I thought, it's just, you know, everybody was like, oh, yeah. This, yeah.
Australia's crazy. They're so openly, casually racist as well.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's the Lebo. They'd call me Lebo.
Oh, really?
Oh, here's the Lebo. Oh, here's my favorite Lebo. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. And you just embrace it because they're not being mean. I think they are.
Let's not get into that now. Let's save that for another episode.
I am aware of my privilege and my entitlement, but I was at the time my gap year, there was something called STA, student travel accommodation, and I don't think that company exists anymore, but you could book if you were about to become a student, you could get really cheap tickets. And you can arrange working visas. And so it was a working gap year. I was so broke. I got kicked out of my Sydney hostel multiple times. And I had to sneak in up the fire escape and sleep under someone's bed. Someone I'd made friends with let me sleep under their bed on the floor.
Wow.
And they knew, the hostel were aware that I was sneaking in. They were doing random spot checks on the rooms. And right. I'd have to just hide under this bed with like the blanket covering. And I'd be there, right. Like hoping they wouldn't stick their head under the bed, like. And so I spent a few nights doing that. It was
right. Well, my stories are obviously not, you know, not. I remember we got so bored in Nelson's Bay that somebody had a pet sheep, and me and Linda became obsessed with this sheep and seeing it every day. And they didn't really. I think they'd sort of left it to get all kind of clacked. They didn't shear it.
Oh, that matted.
I remember the last day when we were going sheep to the airport. Yeah, we got really worried because we couldn't see the sheep. It wasn't in the person's front garden. But then finally, just as the car was taking us to the airport, we saw the sheep
in a moussaka.
So we felt that no, it was just a sheep in a garden. Right. We felt relieved.
Oh, thank God for that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Say goodbye.
Bye bye. You've been listening to the Alexis L podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkuti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.